says, do not therefore offer your bodies as a living sacrifice to the Lord, and don't be conformed to this world. Don't be put into the pressure and the box and the format of this world, which is kind of a big thing to say since we live in this world, and that's exactly what happens. Without countering that, that's exactly what happens to every person. Don't be conformed to this world, molded by this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that perfect and good and acceptable will of God, proving it through your life, seeing it happen in your life. It's a good deal, because otherwise you're not going to be in limbo between the two. You're either being conformed to this world and there's pressure on you to fit something that you may not even understand you're being pressured in, or there's being released, transformed into the image, the mind, the heart of Jesus Christ. And even the leaders of other religions in the world all gave credit to Jesus, though they didn't believe he's the ultimate Son of God. He's the one that gets, he was a great teacher, he is a great man. We know he's far more than all that. But even those from other positions looking at him could not deny the goodness of Jesus Christ. So, in chapter 10, Jesus and his disciples are continuing on their journey. Verse 38 says, and speaking of Jesus and his disciples, I think I'm getting a lot of feedback, yeah. And we read in verse 38, now it happened that he entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. She had a sister called Mary who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, get this, this is like, picture this. Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me. You might think she went, Lord, do you not care? I don't think so. I think Martha was in her power element here. Tell her to help me. And Jesus answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her. Pretty famous story. Hey, did you hear about the guy that he'd go to work every day, and everybody who knew him, he was the big worrier, hand-wringer, constantly expressing, oh, woe is me, you know, wowsy, wowsy, woo-woo, you know, that kind of guy, just all distressed over everything and worried about everything. He was driving the people around him nuts. One Monday morning, he walks in, striding in, whistling, smiling, hey, Joe, hey, Sally, how you doing? And the guy in his cubicle next to him says, hey, wait, what in the world's going on with you? You're always so stressed and worried. I go, that's all done with. I hired somebody this weekend to worry for me. You hired somebody to work? How does that work? What do you pay him? $500 a week, and he does all my worrying for me. He goes, $500 a week? How are you going to pay him? That's his problem. So, you know, it doesn't really work that way, though, does it? That would be nice if you could just dump that worry onto some person like that. Even paying your bills, but we can bring our burdens to the Lord. But the point here is that he's in Bethany at the home of Martha and Mary and Lazarus. And really, can you blame her? Ladies, I know you can grasp this, that, I mean, it's Jesus coming to visit. Now, this is before he raises Lazarus from the dead, but he's still Jesus, okay? And it's like, have you ever had somebody that you were really wanting, not that you're looking to impress people and put on airs, but you had somebody come into your house that was a new family member that was married into the family, or some big person from the community, or from a church situation, whatever, that you really, you know, these people are really important to me. And come on, you're saying you didn't like clean the bathroom 3 times, you know, once after every kid was in there. after you had already got it cleaned. You didn't go make your best meal you could possibly make and go to the store and spend out of your budget. Here we go about money again. Going beyond your budget to go get the right stuff to make the super meal. You know, you can just see that is a normal process in one sense. There's a good side to caring about your guests. And Martha, it appears very clear that she was the eldest in the family. And it's her house, doesn't mean it wasn't her brother and sister's house, but I think she's the eldest. She's definitely older than Mary, and she's the in-charge person there. You know, she kind of runs the household. And if you are one of the elder, if you're an elder brother or sister in your family, did you notice when you're growing up how much responsibility kind of naturally came to you? And then on top of it, you may be the type of personality. Some people rebel against that. I don't want no stinking responsibility and kind of blow it off. And other people, it's like they wear it as a mantle. I'm the responsible one. And so I think she's got that mantle on her. And we're not to think that serving is wrong. It's good. We'll talk about it. But as Jesus teaches, we find Mary where we always find her. If you go through the scriptures on Mary, where do you find her? At Jesus' feet. In Acts 22, what that means is helped to us by Paul when he speaks in the Caesarea to the leaders there, these government officials. He says, listen, I was brought up at the feet of Gamaliel. Gamaliel was the big shot rabbi, that, and I mean that in a positive. He was a respected man with a lot of insight and wisdom. Paul was one of his disciples. He sat at his feet, didn't mean that he sat right directly below him at his feet, though disciples would sit on the ground, teacher might sit in a chair, or they'd sit in benches at a synagogue or something and study. But the point was not physically at his feet as much as under his teaching, under his authority, under his teaching, under his authority, sitting at the feet. Mary made Jesus and his word the authority in her life. And it was the better thing. Better? What was the benefit that she reaped from the better thing, since it's called the better thing? Well, I could give you some things in my sense about it and from Scripture, and you may run in your mind with many, many more than I could come up with. But for sure, Mary found clarity and sense of purpose at the feet of Jesus. Do you sometimes lack clarity? Do you sometimes lack sense of purpose? Are you sometimes get confused and feel like you're a dog chasing his tail? You know, trying to figure stuff out and what your life's about. Do you really sit at the feet of Jesus? See, she did. And she did. She, in John chapter 11, when Lazarus is raised from the dead, a story you know, Martha is the first one to come out and greet Jesus as he's coming in. Jesus speaks all those words. All those words. I am the resurrection and the life. He that lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Those words were spoken to Martha. Mary is still in the house. When Mary comes out, the master's looking for you, and she runs out, oh, Jesus, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. Same words as Martha. She doesn't hear those words from him firsthand. It doesn't say that. He spoke them to Martha. He says, where have you lain him? And they go, and he shows her the power of the words that he spoke when he says, Lazarus, come forth. Mary certainly hears from Martha later, and we all hear it, the words that he spoke to Martha. Mary hears those words. So your point, Rick, I knew I got you hanging. There is a point. Who really got it? The one who heard it first? I'm not so sure that well. I'm not saying she didn't get it, but you know who really got it? Mary. Well, why do you say that? Because John chapter 12 comes right after John chapter 11. And in John chapter 12, Jesus is back at Martha and Mary's house, and Martha is serving, and by the way, she's fine. She gets through this thing. She gets to the other side. There's no problem with her serving. And Mary doesn't just come and sit at Jesus' feet. What does she do? She takes her box, her sealed container of extremely expensive ointment, perfume, kind of a, it was her dowry. It's most understood. It was because when she breaks it open and starts washing Jesus' feet and wiping them with this and putting this anointing on him, Judas speaks up and says, "Hey, what in the world are you doing? Why are we letting her do this? That could have been sold for 300 pence. That could have been sold for like a half a year or a year's wages." She didn't have like a shelf of different perfume. Chanel number 5, you know, Walmart number 1, and then there's my box of this. It was like she had this box waiting for her marriage, waiting for her to either sell or to use. It was her dowry, is the best understanding most scholars have. She was giving her life, and she was anointing Jesus, and Jesus says, "You have the poor with you always, but me you don't have with you always." She has done this in regard to my burial as a preparation for my burial. And this will be spoken of her. And it is right now today. Do you know what? Mary understood. Do I know how much she understood that Jesus was going to die on a cross and raise the third day? I don't know that she got all of that. You couldn't say that. I can't say I know that. But she knew something that nobody else seemed. Did the disciples know it? It actually says in another place they kind of argued about the money being spent and wasted too. And we never see them really get it before the resurrection. The only person we see who Jesus says, "She's preparing for my burial," is Mary. Where does insight come from? True insight. A book? I read books. I get insights from other people. Listening online to a Bible study? I do that too, don't you? Some of you? We get insights from other people. But where your true understanding of Jesus comes from is from him personally sitting at his feet. And whether you're doing that through study and etc., there's just something dynamic and powerful here, the better thing. She gave her dowry, she worshiped him, and she understood prophecy more than anyone else around. And I think something else that she had, because of her sitting at his feet, confidence, assurance, confidence, assurance of her relationship with God. Would you like that in your life? I don't say that like, well, none of you have it. I'm just rhetorically and for thought process, of course, asking, would you like confidence and assurance? May I suggest to you, you're not going to find it anywhere less than at the feet of Jesus. It's not plan A, but there's plan B, C, and D. And you can't drive through and pick it up in a window. It's not going to happen that way. So Martha, on the other hand, is troubled and anxious about much. She's disturbed. And everything she's disturbed about and troubled by is none of it is lasting in and of itself. None of it's going to go on forever is the issue of life. Ecclesiastes 1:15 puts it this way, just part of the verse says, the things that are wanting or needing cannot be numbered. You can't number the things that are needed. If I asked you to take out a piece of paper and a pen and list all the things that are needed in your life, how many volumes would we fill today of stuff to think of? And, oh, yeah, there's that, you know, not just your physical list, your emotional list, your mental list, your social list, your fellowship, friendship, family list. It's just endless, you know. The way it was put to us in a better way is somebody gave us years ago a box with a notepads that you could write your notes on and send them. Kind of a nice, but it had that old grumpy lady on it that you see in little sayings. And at the top it said, it had her picture over there in the corner. And then it said, 100 years from now, this won't matter. And at the bottom of the page it said, it hardly matters now. We weren't offended at all that they were saying to us. Some people would be like, well, what I write is important. Listen, it's important in the moment. There's things that we should do, but you know, it hardly matters now is a really great statement to stop us in our tracks and think about what we're doing and think about what's really important in life. You see, Martha's problem is not Mary. Oh, I know there are some people who are lazy and who will take advantage of other people's strong work skills. And I need there's times to step in to help a person see their error and their need to get a kick in the rear and get moving. I mean, that's all real. But that's not what's going on here, is it? Or else you're saying Jesus was missing it. It doesn't seem like Jesus was missing it. So this is one of those things. Psalm 27, had we read it in the middle of the chapter, it says, one thing I've desired of the Lord, as I did mention to you right at the beginning. Another way of saying it is, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Now, if this is all in your mind, and it's really okay, if you're sitting here today and you're somebody who this is all a little bit too lofty, a little bit out of my grasp to kind of grab a hold of what it means to sit at the feet of Jesus under his teaching, under his authority, and to have it be a real live relationship of depth for me, hard to grasp. Instead of worrying about whether you're 100% there or not, let me stop. If you're 100% there, you just got this down without question, just please raise your hand. And we'll escort you to the Looney Tune farm because maybe we'll just call you a liar. I didn't think so. Who's got this down 100%? I sure don't. But instead of worrying about whether you're all the way there and, oh, I'm not that person and I do get distracted and I don't even understand it that well, oh, and just feel like giving up, that would be the enemy's voice in your mind. That's not the Lord. The Lord is not rebuking you to defeat and discouragement and rejection. You know, I could do that accidentally because I'm just a guy. But God's not ever doing that. But I'd like to suggest to you that it's kind of like what people say, I don't have time to read the Bible. And I remember when I was really busy, had small children, had a lot of work, and a church to pastor, worked full time. And I realized that when I couldn't read for a half hour, I felt just, or 15 or 20 minutes, I felt totally defeated. And I realized that I felt like God spoke to me. He says, well, Rick, you're in the car, before you drive out the driveway, read a few verses in your reading. And just meditate on them as you drive. Have something fed into you. It's kind of like taking your energy drink with you. Not those 5-hour, but a healthy energy drink. Not recommending those. A healthy, you know, kale energy mixture. And you're drinking that. It's like you don't have time to sit before a meal, but you have time to take in nourishment, don't you? And it's quick. And you can do it while you're driving. You know, you can read a few verses and ponder those verses. And if you're reading the Bible, when you read the Bible, you're putting in time so you can check your list that you read your Bible. You know, you're still in school. You're in some kind of school with a headmaster with a stick in his hand. That isn't Jesus. That isn't the Bible. God wants to feed you. He wants to feed your spirit. We don't want you to become a Bible genius in your mind. We're not here to force that. But we are here to learn. And one of the things we're here to learn is how to walk with Jesus. And if you got 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and see, I don't have time. I can never say that. I mean, I get lots of time to choose from. And I still waste time. And I'm sorry and sad about that. But I also find the Lord to be very merciful. That when I say, oh, Lord, I'm wasting time, I could just be seeking you. I mean, you can't read the Bible all day long. If any of you are good at that, like all day just read the Bible, you're a better person than I am. I can't do that. I got to get up and move and do stuff and think about it and tune on it. And I can't listen to Bible studies all day long because it's just too much light all at once and they contradict each other and your mind explodes. You know, I'm just not built that way. But I can sit at Jesus' feet. And if you would take 20 minutes 3 times a week, I'm just giving a picture. This is not the system, okay? I'm pointing, and just say, you know, I'm going to, here's the thing, it isn't time to pray for your prayer list. That's separate, that's different. You can do it around that too, but if all you do in your prayer life is pray for what you want and what you need, that's not really a relationship. You understand what I'm saying? I don't come home when I've been out and Gail says, okay, sit out at the table. Here's what I need you to do. Well, okay, she might do that here and there. And me too. But that's not our whole relationship. Is not, here's what you should do, or here's what you should do. Okay, please do this for me. That's part of a relationship, sure. But it's the lesser part, and it's not the better part. Now, if you're a person who resists doing anything for the people in your life and you don't ever help them and do stuff to bless them, well, you got another problem. But in terms of saying, Lord, I just want to know you, and you say, well, that's too vague for me. I've often mentioned what has come very clear to me, and I don't think it's a genius thing. I think it's a natural thing. If you sit out in your yard, if you have a yard and you have trees, you also have birds, and you have wind, and you have air, and you have squirrels and more squirrels and chipmunks and gophers and holes in your yard, and you start to get troubled and worried about many things. Now you have nature out there, and you go, wow, Lord, all of this is created by you. All of this is worshiping you. All of this testifies of you. I just want you to cause my heart to understand that I'm talking to the living, eternal God, and I want it to matter to me that I'm with you right now. Forgive me. I often say, Lord, forgive me, because I already know this really well, and I still don't get it or walk in it. But forgive me, and start me fresh with you right here, right now. His mercies are new every morning. You know what? They kind of kick in the afternoon, too, and in the evening. It doesn't mean they're not new later on. It means when you start out, they're there for you, and they will be there for you. Is that great? I didn't make that up. That's God. So get to know him on the basis of his mercy to you and on his greatness towards you. And if you don't think, and I'm sure you do, but if you don't think that's of value, doesn't that say more about the limit of your mind than it does about God not being valuable? Doesn't that mean that you're living in a very small little world? Admit it. Not to me. I don't need to know this, but admit it to yourself and say, I live in a small little world. It's all about what I want, and that's all I can think about. I don't know how to think outside of that. And if that is you, God wants to set you free. Amen. He wants to set you free from that because it's a better thing. It's not a worse thing. It's not a burdensome thing. It's a better thing to know who he is. So instead of worrying, try it. You'll like it. Taste and see that the Lord is good. And then we have, you know, it's funny because I mentioned last week at the end of second service after Chris Woodruff spoke so wonderfully, and I got pretty intense about how they pray for us in Africa. And at the end, I even mocked myself for my silliness of saying, now go home condemned because you're not like them. Let me correct it a little further. I hopefully you didn't take it that way, and I was aware of myself afterwards. But let me say this, that I'm not suggesting to you, it's important that you know this. People in Africa or in the East aren't automatically more spiritual or never worry. I mean, who is Jesus talking to right here? A lady named Martha who lived in where? Ancient Israel. In the East. Okay? You know, yuppies in New York State, New York City, or anywhere in the USA, riding to work on subways, looking at their watches, trying to get all their stuff done, you know, they don't have a corner on the market on worrying. In Matthew 5, when Jesus gives the Sermon on the Mount and says, don't worry about your life, what clothing you're going to put on. Look at the flowers, how God clothes them. Don't worry about your food, what you're going to eat and drink, because God takes care of the birds. Remember that? Kind of famous verses. They weren't all sitting there in suits with their phones going, yeah, I'll get with you in a minute, Lord. These were farmers on a hillside in Galilee. So I stand corrected to say to you, well, I already knew, people are people. And everywhere you go, there's people who worry, aren't there? And everywhere you go, there's people who worry about things they don't need to worry about or worry about things that are real but don't know how to transition, be transformed into giving that to God. We are not, and Jesus isn't suggesting there's nothing to care about or be concerned about. That's not the point at all, but how you care about it. And so we all have worry and struggle, and to learn how to sit and hear and experience Jesus. Now, you need the front of your bulletin explained probably this verse, which is 2 Samuel chapter 15. It's not on there, but it should be. But it's 2 Samuel 15, verse 21. You don't have to turn there, but you might want to make note of this. Is what's happening is Gail and I were reading this in our morning devotion time in Samuel, and I was just so struck by this. David is being chased out of Jerusalem, King David, by his son Absalom, who's a rebel and trying to take over the kingdom. And David's aware that God is dealing with him because of his sin with Bathsheba and Uriah the Hittite. And if you don't know the story, you'll just have to go back to 2 Samuel. But David is like, okay, we're leaving. Everybody who's with me, let's leave the city. We're not going to fight against my son. And he's going out in exile. And people are coming to him to join him. And one of them is this guy named Ittaiah the Gittite. That means that's the place he was from or the family he's from. You don't know much about him. What you do know is this. He comes up and David says, Ittaiah, what are you doing here? You can go to Jerusalem and stay and you're fine. Absalom's not after you. He doesn't say all these words, but I'm giving you the He goes, and you're an exile from where you came from, and you just got to Jerusalem. He knows the guy and made a place for him. You just got here yesterday, and now you're going to leave and follow me? I'm going out. I don't even know where I'm going. I don't even know if he's going to chase me down. You don't need to come after me. Go to Jerusalem and be at peace. But Ittaiah answered the king and said, as the Lord lives and as my lord the king lives, surely in whatever place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there shall your servant be. What's the point? This guy says, basically, I didn't come to Jerusalem just to be a part of the kingdom. I came to Jerusalem to be with the king. It is not enough to be a part of the kingdom. We talk, you know, Christians talk in terms, and wonderfully so, kingdom, it's kingdom life, be a part of the kingdom, right? That's all. I'm not knocking it. It's wonderful. But the only thing that makes being a part of the kingdom really workable is having a relationship with the king. This is a different kingdom. This is a kingdom where if you don't have a relationship with the kingdom will not mean a lot to you. In fact, it will annoy you greatly. And the people of the kingdom will annoy you greatly. Greatly. Now, they're still going to annoy you. But you're going to get over it if your eyes are on the king, if your relationship is being built with the king. If it's all horizontal, you're in trouble. This is everything in life. You say, I'm not really all on this page with you, and you're going to talk about ministry. Well, you are, because all your life as a Christian is ministry. So even if it's job stuff, family stuff, this will apply if you allow it to. So the kingdom and the king. Martha's distressed in serving. For me, I've spent too much time in my life being exactly like Martha's. Anybody else? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness. Listen, I got nothing to say to anybody like I'm so away from that. I have changed greatly because the Lord spoke to me at the age of about 45 and said, after years of working with me on this, said, you know, if you can't get over this thing of the way you do things, I'm just going to have to pull you out of the ministry because you'll kill yourself and you'll bother a lot of people. And, you know, you'll just die doing this the way you're doing it. You see, my aunt came to me when my dad died when I was 15 and said, Ricky, you're the last. I loved my aunt. She was the awesomest person I knew. I really looked at her above everybody else in my life. She was awesome and beautiful and California and living the dream, it seemed. I didn't know all the backstory that would happen in her life. But at that time, she came to me and said, Ricky, you're the last hope of your family. You've got to make something of yourself. Now, I was already, even though I was the youngest kid, I was already bent towards taking responsibility for everybody else's life around me and getting nervous about stuff. And I was raised Jewish, so it was like part of your culture to be neurotic. So I can say that. You can't say that, but I can because I came from a neurotic Jewish family. And they're not all like that, but mine was. And I just fit right in. And I was just so overwhelmed with stuff, and she just laid this on me to help me, to encourage me, to motivate me. Kind of was a diss to my brother and sister, really. But nonetheless, I took that mantle on me, and when I became a Christian a few years later, I took that mantle into my Christianity. And now I felt guilty for not being a lawyer or a doctor or something as a Jewish guy. Now I'm a Christian, you know, counter to all my Jewish upbringing, so I got to be the best Christian, but not in a holy, healthy way. In taking responsibility for things and being the fixer. And I know there's lots of fixers in here, and your story might be different from mine, and how you were raised might be different. And some of you, you go, I would have loved somebody to say, there's hope for you, make something, because you were told negative things, and I get that too. I didn't receive that. I received a, you can, you better, you do it, go out, go. And that still put a burden on me that I received. And it took the Lord a long time to work this out of me. And one of the ways I had heard about is there's more danger than just worrying as Martha was worrying. There's more going on with her, I believe, and there's more going on with you and me. And if you want to turn there, I'm going to turn to Leviticus chapter 10. It's a story that you've heard, some of you, and you're aware of from our time here or maybe someplace else. Doesn't matter. We're doing it again. For those, and quickly, but in Leviticus chapter 10, at the end of chapter 9, God has had Moses and the people have built the tabernacle and they're dedicating it. They're putting everything together for the offerings. It says in verse 23, Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of meeting, chapter 9, 23 of Leviticus, and they came out and blessed the people. And then the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people, and fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the fat offering on the altar. And when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. And they weren't bummed out. They were excited and overwhelmed. And so this great event's happening. Chapter 10, verse 1. Then Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, he had four priest sons, and these are two of them, each took censer and put fire in it and put incense on it and offered profane, or King James, I love, strange fire. It wasn't the mixture that God ordained for the temple. There was a mixture that was only to be used for the incense in the temple. It was holy. Now stop for a minute before we read the rest. Understand this. The Old Testament gives us big, bold pictures of spiritual life in the physical realm, like color crayon pictures, versus spiritual life in the New Testament, which is different in that we don't follow just a set of rules and rituals on how to follow Jesus. There are certain things that are elementary, but most of it, you can worship God in many different ways, but you still need to worship God His way. But here it was so specific. Some other church would have an organ or a symphony or have no musical instruments or do different kinds of songs and different order of worship, right? And we don't judge that or fault that. That's just different strokes for different folks. That's nothing more than that. And everyone has a reason why they do it the way they do. And some would get real intense about it. I don't. But is your motivation for God? But here it was very clear. That altar, that incense, that temple, all those things pointed to a very specific picture of Jesus Christ. And you don't make up your own idea and identity. You bring it His way. And for these guys to make a different mixture was profane because they did it knowingly and on purpose. They weren't innocent. They were doing something for their own purpose. And it says they made this profane fire and they brought it before the Lord, which He not commanded them. So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. And Moses said to Aaron, this is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy. And before all the people, I must be glorified. So you can see their motive wasn't God's glory. It was their own glory. And so these guys had the ultimate ministry burnout. I didn't make up that. Others have in the past, but I like it. Being burned out on ministry, there's nothing more burned out than getting burned out by the Lord. You see, only holy fire. Here's how this works. And I've learned this personally, even though I heard it before I learned it. It's, I'll get tired in the work of the ministry. I will get tired when I'm working hard to do the things that God has me to do, and so will you. You know, working hard isn't a bad thing. Take it easy. Hey, man, take it easy. Why do we say that? Is the ultimate goal in life to relax? Is that like the highest thing that you can think of in life, is to relax? That's kind of lame. Take it easy. Now, I'm not faulting if you use that term because it just means see you later. But if it really means that you just want everybody to take it easy, is that what we're communicating to our kids? How about, hey, kids, work hard. Do something of value. Become stronger in your life. Not take it easy. Avoid work and relax, and that's all there is to life. Now, you can take these things wrong, of course, and you can abuse them. But the point is, hard work's a good thing. Getting tired's a good thing. You'll sleep better if you get tired actually working. The sleep of a working man is good, even if his belly's empty. Once he falls on that pillow, falls asleep. Not starving, but, you know, I mean, when you're tired, you're tired. There's nothing wrong with getting tired. But I'll get tired in working in the ministry, and that's not wrong. Paul said, I labored more than all the other apostles. He wasn't on a trip. He wasn't trying to prove his righteousness. He was just motivated by the love of God to do what counted. Hey, Paul, take it easy. Somebody will get to Ephesus someday. I mean, maybe Philippians don't need to hear the word yet. Don't worry about the Thessalonians. They're crazy over there. It's a lot of work to go there. Aren't you glad Paul didn't listen to take it easy? Don't write the book of Romans. It's so detailed, and there's so much work for you there to put together the book of Romans. Just take it easy. I'm so glad he didn't. But burnout of ministry is different. And it's because of motive. If my motive may be, I want the praise of other people, I need self-identity and satisfaction, or, ding, 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 my big one, I need to be needed. Do you need to be needed? Well, there's a healthy part of that, of wanting to be needed, wanting to be useful. We're not going to say you shouldn't want to be useful to others, but there's a real problem. I speak this from experience. You can disagree, that's fine, but I'm telling you, and I have the microphone, for whatever that's worth. I'm telling you from knowledge, the need to be needed is dangerous. It will make you do things that you ought not to do for reasons you ought not to do. It will not let you stop and make sure it's the Lord. You know, the good side to take it easy is, spiritually, there is an ease to resting in the Lord and his finished work and doing what you do out of that strength. And I can tell you, my journey has been long and hard on that level, but good. And it's only because of me that it was hard. And you know what? It's okay. God honored my labors, but he also was working with me through the years and decades. Sorry, guys. Decades. Not years. Decades. I'm a slow learner. I'm a slow bloomer, whatever you want to say. A lot of things have come to me after I moved here, and it was a while after I moved here. It's okay with me, because what I want is Jesus. And that's what you learn, is what you want is Jesus. I don't want to prove how great I used to be or am right now. It's a waste of energy. In fact, it's worse than a waste of energy. Holy fire for your motive. You see, here's the problem. We'll get tired of it all. If it's to get praise from people and have them tell you how great you are and how much they appreciate what you did, well, something's going to happen. Sometimes they won't. Has that ever happened to you? You do and you do and you do and nobody says thank you. Now, we're not talking about going into abusive situations that are unhealthy. We're talking in general here that you have this thing, a need to be given praise, and that's why you're motivated. Well, that won't work, because sometimes people won't give you, they won't show you that respect. In fact, sometimes you'll get mistreated and misunderstood for the very thing you do that's right. How does that feel? Not very good, and it's not supposed to feel good. I'm not saying we can take all this away. I'm saying this is what you have to deal with. And if your motivation for ministry or for the work that you do is to gain from other people praise, you're going down. Somewhere along the line, you're going to get frustrated and get burned out. You know, and if you're doing it for self-satisfaction and self-achievement, there's nothing wrong with accomplishing and growing in yourself. But if that's your whole ultimate motive, when things don't work out the way you thought, you don't gain out of it what you thought, you're burned out. I'm so sick of this. And if it's your need to be needed, you're going to get mistreated and misunderstood, and you're going to fail at doing what you thought you were good at sometimes. And that's a kicker, man. That's hard. And you know what you're going to say in all these things? I'll never do that again. I have been burned too many times. I've been burned. I'm burned out. The question isn't the people that treated you, though there may be times to adjust. There's times to confront people. There's times to say no to people. There's all of that. And that comes from having a motive that comes from being at the feet of Jesus. That's where that comes from. The better thing comes from getting direction and whole mind and heart from Jesus. It doesn't come from these relationships that you're trying to make the issue of life. It's not going to happen. It's going to frustrate you, and you will get burned out. That doesn't mean we should all mistreat each other and test each other to see how lame we are about trusting. I mean, we should. I should thank people who help me. That doesn't take the burden off of me to be the right person. That's God's going to work with me. Or if he doesn't, if I don't let him, that's even a sadder thing for me. But I still need to be the person God intends us to be for the reason, from the strength that he gives you that has to do with you and him and not other people. And then you can be with people and know they may not be thankful. They may fail you. You may have to adjust how you deal with things. You may have to change. Sometimes you change directions in ministries, but not, I'm so burned out, I'm so sick of this. And pastors who get burned out in the ministry have a responsibility of their own. I speak as one of them, that it isn't just about how everybody treated them. Everybody gets treated hard, right? Sometimes. If you're a plumber and you reached out to help somebody who is new in your life or at the church in need, and they, instead of thanking you, blamed you for other problems and turned on you, I think you feel just as bad as a pastor who got turned on. I think your back is ripped open just as much as a pastor. I don't think pastors are different. I think all of life includes people appreciating you and people dissing you. And the goal here is for you and I to become the people that God intends us to be. And when your cup gets shaken, whatever comes out of it was in the cup. So when you get shaken by what people do, that shows what was in you. Now they have responsibility. But my number one responsibility is to find Jesus in my life, isn't it? And to sit at his feet. This is why this is so important. Strange fire. I'll never do that again. I've been burned. I'm not doing that. I've been burned. I've been burned too many times. Well, you've been motivated wrongly too many times. Now, that's hard to hear if you're a struggle with this. But I'm not doing you any favors if I lightfoot this. I'm not doing you any favors, and people aren't doing you favors when they try to help you avoid facing yourself. That does not help you. Everybody here can blame everybody else in the world for who we are. Every single one of us can blame somebody for who we are, and it will get you exactly where you are right now and nowhere else. There's no hope there, and there's no help there. But at the feet of Jesus, it may take a while, but you'll find release. So, you know, and here's the other part of the good thing. It isn't just, well, get used to it. You're going to get burned and just face it and accept it. Where asbestos? It's not, it isn't like that. Hebrews 10:6 tells us God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you've shown to his name and that you ministered to the saints and do minister. There is only one place to have this confidence, and it's at the throne of God, to know that he's not unjust, that he sees you and he knows what you've done and he cares about it, and he does. But your reward may not be on earth. You know, the Pharisees, all they wanted was those things we mentioned. Self-satisfaction, people to need them, people to praise them, all their works they do to be seen of men. And they were like the happiest, most kindest group of people you ever met, right? They were bitter people because of it. They could never fulfill themselves any more than you and I could by those things. Jesus has something better for us. And he's not going to forget, but your treasure is to be stored in heaven, not on earth. Yes, you hope to see some results, of course. Yes, you can get discouraged in doing the right thing. But when it's a constant pattern in your life, this is when you need to take responsibility to go to the Lord and say, God, this is a pattern in my life. This is what happens to me over and over again, and this I get more and more bitter and frustrated. That is how you will find God's freedom. Go to him. Seek him. And the hardest thing is to actually, the first time you say, hey, Rick, can you do this with me? I really, 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 really need you to be the one to help me. And you say, no, I can't do it. And not, no, I can't do it because you have this really great excuse of because you're so busy or you just broke your arm or you'd help, you know. But you actually just know you're not supposed to help and you're supposed to let God work it out another way. And now some people know how to say no all the time. They never say yes. That's another problem. But the people like me who used to say yes to everything, to the destruction of my wife to some degree and my children. I mean, I wasn't like out the deep end, but it was dangerous and unhealthy. And it was most of all not honoring to God, trusting him. And it meant I must not be sitting, and I was trying to sit at his feet. So listen, here's something you can do instead of the guilt, the thing, whatever. It's just be specific when you pray. Pray for holy fire in your life. If you like that term, use another term if you don't like the term holy fire. Be specific on asking God to help you focus and seek him for the right attitude. Lord, here's a great question. Lord, why do I do what I do? I hated that question. But now I find freedom. When I get stuck, I go, okay, why am I doing this? What is my motive? Is it really to honor you, or is it to get something, or I don't want people mad at me? Good luck. They'll be mad at you anyway, and you'll just be more unhappy. You know, love and extend yourself to people, yes, but do it under the grace of God. And be specific when you pray, because I'm talking to those who have a problem chronically with this, and you know who you are. I don't, but you do. Why do I do what I do? And the priests served in linen, not in wool, because God didn't want them carrying burdens that weren't those. It doesn't mean you don't work hard. It doesn't mean you don't get tired. It doesn't mean you don't get frustrated sometimes. I do get frustrated still, sometimes. I don't live in it. I don't live in it. I know that I'm somewhere wrong there, or that the problem I'm facing is real, but I don't need to take it on me. I'm looking at Bill here, how he helped me once when I had poured into a young man, and the young man kind of had trouble and kind of did weird things, you know, coming in front of my house, like to kind of pace in front of my house to bother me kind of, and he was not in his right mind even. And I was like really tense about this. Kevin was there for this too. And I called Bill. I said, you know, the guys need to understand how to deal with this guy because, you know, and I was just all wound up. And Bill just said 5 words, I think, to me. He didn't get to finish his sentence. Maybe you finished it, but I didn't hear it. He goes, Rick, don't feel like you have to, like, carry the whole weight of this guy's... That's all I heard. And I went, oh, that's what I'm doing. I felt like a little kid. I was the pastor. He wasn't even an elder then yet, I don't think. You have a title. And he ministered to my heart, and I needed it. I needed somebody to pull that intensity and that worry and that stress and that demand for me to fix it out of me. And God sent a brother to me. And I just went, oh, thank you, Bill. So I'm doing that, aren't I? Well, I don't remember anything else about the conversation because a big burden came off of me. So, yeah, you go to Jesus' feet, you sit under his authority and under his power and under his teaching, And sometimes it happens, it does happen through the body, through other people. But you received it. I didn't receive it that Bill's the wisest person I know. You're pretty smart, but he has his ups and downs too. I received it as the Lord through him. Isn't that what's really happening? If I'm ministering to you right now, is this the great Rick? Or is God speaking to you through his scripture and some kind of weird guy saying things that fit? Because I know it fits to some of you, and I know you know it. And my prayer and encouragement to you is go to the throne, go to the feet of Jesus. And even if it's just a few times this week that you say, I'm going to make everything about this time just being with you in your presence. I don't know. And if it's new to you, it means it's hard. There are people who will not pray because they're afraid that God might not speak to them. And they don't want to get frustrated and feel more distant. Has that ever been you? It's been me. I'm not going to pray because if I pray and I don't hear from God like I hear these people talking, then I'll feel like I'm alienated and outside and he doesn't love me. And there's people that just won't pray because they're afraid God won't speak. And there are people who won't pray because they know God will speak. Right? Have you ever been that person? Like, I already know I'm in sin. I already know I'm in rebellion. I already know I'm holding bitterness in my heart. If I go humble myself before God and sit before his throne, what's he going to say to me? Hey, Rick, let's talk about how you were feeling about Beth or David. Not ever Gail. No, let's talk about how you're building up this thing against Tony or against whoever or Tom or something. Let's talk about how you're carrying this issue or this sin in your life. You know, there are people who won't pray because they're afraid God won't speak to them. And you need to be encouraged that he will meet you. And even if it takes a while, you're on the right track. You're not going to do it better by going the other way. And there are others of us that need to know you're afraid to talk to God, really, because you absolutely know he's going to speak to you. And I would encourage you, there's freedom and release and love. His mercies are new every morning. Let's stand together. We had a song, but I think I'm going to let you go. We got a barbecue to go to. We got to hurry. I'm worried about it. All right.